The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul. Thank you for joining us. My guest is Andrew Pearl of Swinerton, the commercial construction and construction management services company. Andrew came to New York as vice president and division manager of the New York office in June 2021, right in the teeth of the COVID-19 pandemic that sent office workers and companies scrambling to other states, to the suburbs, the outer boroughs, and to their homes. Kind of the story we've seen nationally. And wanted Andrew to come on the program because Swinerton, big player in the space, is bullish on office. Okay. Now, Andrew is located in New York. New York was one of those markets that got slammed really hard. If New York can recover with office, presumably pretty much any other metropolitan area in the United States can do so as well. But there's an awful lot of people out there who say office will never be the same. We'll ask Andrew Pearl about that and whether it's consistent. I doubt it's consistent because they are bullish on the office market. With no further delay, Andrew, I want to welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate you inviting me on. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, me too. So talk about why Swinerton is bullish on office. I mean, maybe you guys don't have a choice. You're in the business, although you don't only build office, but you guys are bullish on office. So what is it that you're seeing in New York City and maybe around the country that has convinced you guys to take that stance?
Sure. Yeah, when we put the plan together to enter New York City, it was right during the pandemic, and it was for all the reasons that you said. You know, we were bullish on it back then. Certainly, we raised some eyebrows when we made the announcement that we were coming to New York. We were going to focus on corporate interiors and office. And you know, the reason that we were so positive on what was going to be happening. You know, New York is it's an interesting place. It's obviously the most densely populated city in terms of office. You know, it's got, every sector is represented here, but it's cultural and it really is the lifeblood of the city. And it's not because people didn't want to come back. It was just they were waiting for when. And so it took a little bit longer than we had anticipated. But you know, certainly, if you're reading the tea leaves, and you're not just following the headlines, the return to office in New York City is real. Every day, it seems like traffic, both pedestrian, vehicular, public transit, is picking up, and occupancy rates are rising.
Where are they now? I understand that Austin, Texas, I think, has the highest occupancy rate in the country. In New York City, what were they before the pandemic and where are they now?
Well, before the pandemic, you know, I'm assuming, I don't have that data offhand, but I'm assuming it was, you know, in a very high 90s on a regular basis, depending on the time of year. The summer, obviously, things calm down and people head out to the shore or to the Hamptons. But, you know, certainly on average, I imagine that, you know, New York was in the high 90s. During the pandemic, things obviously went south, and we were trending in the 10 to 15 to 20% on a regular basis. It was the essential workers. Finance was kind of still kicking along. Some healthcare was moving along, but it was relatively quiet. You know, now what I'm hearing, I was out last night with one of our clients, you know, one of the biggest landlords in town. Their trophy building is at 98% occupancy on a regular basis. It is in Midtown Manhattan, and you know, they're really excited about the results of that particular building. And across their portfolio in New York, they're seeing continued occupancy rates go up.
Okay, now let me ask you about, I want to talk to you about the change in mentality among workers who say, I like working at home. I'm more productive at home. I save time not commuting. There's all these issues that are coming up, and employers have had a rough time getting people to come back. Maybe New York City is a little different. The nature of New York is a very dense city. It's a great walking city. They also have subway. It's very easy to get around New York. So it's a little bit different case, perhaps. Before I have you answer that question, I just want to tell our listeners that, you know, Swinerton has been around for 135 years. Only now they have opened in New York. They've been out west for many years, around the country for many years, but they only now in 2021, June of 2021, is when Andrew came in to open this New York office. And again, it was right in the throes of the COVID-19 pandemic. So yeah, a lot of people probably scratching their heads over that one at the time. What about that, though? There is a psychographic change in the United States. People are now saying that I'm not going to work for an employer that doesn't let me work from home because it's too much better of a lifestyle than going back to the office. And secondarily, the office, what does the office offer that I don't have at home?
Yeah,
it used to be that way when the computer equipment was expensive and you needed that gantry of technology, but now personal technology is almost as powerful, it seems, as corporate technology. So I kind of balled up a lot there, but what do you think, Andrew? What about the psychographic change for starters, and then kind of leading into the whole idea of what does the office have to offer?
Sure. I mean, I'll try to break that down into manageable chunks. I think it is important to kind of remind everybody that this was 135 years in the making. So this isn't just a whim that Swinerton decided we were going to do this. It was strategic. What we're seeing, you know, and I'm going to speak specifically to New York right now, the cultural differences in terms of workplace in New York are unlike any other metropolitan city in the country. And what I mean by that is people go to work and they go to the office not necessarily for the actual tasks that they do on a, you know, regular working hour basis. They go to New York because there are breakfast meetings, there are lunch meetings, there are after dinner or after work drinks and events. You know, you walk around Midtown or you walk around down in the financial district, there are restaurants throughout the day that are jammed with people. And it's because they're back in the office, and I use the air quotations, they're back in the office for not necessarily the work itself, but the social aspect of it, the networking, the deals that are made outside of the four walls of a conference room. And that really is the cultural difference that I believe is driving Manhattan back to the office. It's not because they can't be productive elsewhere. I think we've proven that we can be productive in a lot of sectors, but you cannot replicate virtually what happens in the lunch meetings and the dinner events that go on in New York.
Let me stop you for just a minute, because I want to ask you this. How did you guys know, how did you assess and understand New York City well enough to say the nature of New York City is such that people are going to come back to the office because it's also a social occasion to go to the office as well? Did you hire any organization to do market research for you in advance?
Well, we do have external partners to help us do market and, you know, analytics, and that's more about kind of projecting the future of construction as a whole. I think on the cultural aspect of it, you know, I was born and raised in the shadows of Manhattan. I spent 15 years with Swinerton on the West Coast in three different markets, LA, San Diego, and San Francisco. So I understand the West Coast markets, but truly New York and the New York metropolitan area has always been, you know, in my genes. So I kind of knew, generally speaking, what the culture was like in Manhattan and understood that there is just no way to replicate what goes on a daily basis in New York virtually. It doesn't happen. And I truly don't believe people that live and work in New York wanted it to. I think there was certainly an exodus. People were scared. There was a lot going on with the pandemic. And they felt like they had to, and they decided to either leave the city because there was nothing to do in the city, or they wanted to stretch out and go to the suburbs for a while. But, you know, I would challenge someone to come into New York right now and find an apartment to rent. I would also ask them to look at the leasing activity that's going on. People are back and they want to be in the office environment.
Now, are you guys going to be building in New York City? Do you have projects in the pipeline right now?
Yeah, we have projects underway, and and the office. We're actually doing a spec office on Madison Avenue right now. That's under construction. So that pretty much tells you what all you need to know about office is that we're doing spec again.
Well, let me ask you this, though. What do you do? Are you doing anything differently now than before? In other words, in New York, maybe different, but there's a lot of people who are saying you really need to go to the next level with office. It needs to be kind of a life. You know how the malls went to lifestyle malls because people weren't interested in old malls anymore. So they went to the lifestyle malls. It's been suggested that office needs to go to lifestyle office, to where it offers a lot more in the way of amenities and experiences, so that an employee really would say, you know, I would like to go into the office rather than be at home, because there is something additive about that. Now, New York City might be different that way, but I would think that you guys build all over the country, so you have to be thinking about that in other markets as well. So what about that?
Yeah, for sure. There has definitely been an increased focus on the amenities of office. You know, the trophy buildings that came online, whether that was in Hudson Yards or One Vanderbilt, they were fortunate enough to have enough wow just kind of pre-built into them, into the design, that when they turned on during the pandemic, you know, they were able to offer those amenities. The existing stock, there has definitely been an increased focus on how do they introduce those amenities into these buildings, whether it's cafes, you know, working lounges is kind of a new term that we're hearing. Certainly collaboration spaces, you know, rooftop amenities for their employees, whether they're shared across the building or they're privatized, you know, wellness centers. All of these things are definitely in the conversation on a much more regular basis. And I think it is partly because they're trying to give people a reason to get back. But, you know, it's also because I think everyone's kind of recognized that there's a lot of positives that come out of this, right? These working lounges that people are talking about, you know, you could have 40 or 50 people in a room all grinding away and working, but they're also communicating and they're networking and they're sharing ideas collaboratively in a space that's, you know, a really positive environment. And, you know, whether it's a reason to bring them back to the office or because they're actually seeing increased productivity, I think is still yet to be determined.
Interesting. So as you broaden out and look around the country at some of the offices your colleagues are running, and you've been on the West Coast, you've been, as you said, San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco. How is office doing from Swinnerton's standpoint nationally? If you could hop around some of the markets maybe and tell us where there's maybe thumbs up, thumbs down, or you know, kind of the combination of the two.
Sure. You know, I think there's, I can tell you that there are definitely positives and negatives as we look at the different, we have 21 offices across the company. And that is heavily concentrated in the West Coast. We have offices in Hawaii, and then in the central region, we have Denver, Austin, Dallas, the Southeast, we have Atlanta, Charlotte, Raleigh, and now New York. If we look across the entire organization from our pipeline perspective, you know, what are we seeing from all the offices? The office market is currently tracking the third largest in terms of our overall pipeline from an 18-month, you know, look ahead perspective, right? The number one is residential education, and that goes K through higher education, and then it gets into office. So even if certain markets are seeing a slowdown and maybe there's not as much in progress right now, we're still tracking the third most opportunities in the office sector. And I think that there's definitely going to be a continued focus, whether that's in San Francisco or Portland or Seattle or even Denver, for local, you know, authorities to continue to work with the business environment to get people back to office, because there's so many things that are dependent on it, right? The local market, the food and beverage industries that serve the workers throughout the day, the public transit that's not being utilized, and so there's revenue losses there. You know, there's just so many things that are kind of byproducts of the workplace environment that we've always believed, and that's why we came to New York. We just believe that it has to come back. And whether it's all the way back or it looks different or it feels different, you know, I think there's going to be changes. But again, the future seems to be that the office is coming back.
Well, what's the difference between a good office market and a suspect office market? What are some of the just basically the physical or cultural aspects to a city that make you say that's a place where office will thrive?
Well, density for sure is really important, right? So,
you've worked out in the West, and I got to tell you, you know, Los Angeles and San Diego, these are not dense markets.
No.
San Francisco, yes. It's almost like I compare San Francisco to Boston in that it's on the water. It's and its scale is more akin to Boston, where New York is, it's kind of like New York too, but New York is so mammoth compared to San Francisco. But what about that? You talk about density, you've been out West. So what about those markets then? I mean, I'm kind of jumping your answer here.
That's okay.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think you have to go to bat for LA and San Diego in some form if you think they've got a good future too and how they make it work. But go ahead with what you're saying. Sorry.
That's okay. I mean, when I talk about density, I do talk about, you know, downtown districts, right? And even in San Diego and Los Angeles, while the overall office market is pretty sprawl, right? You have the downtown, you know, office business district, but then you also have Mission Valley, and you have UTC and La Jolla, and these are much more spread out sort of campus urban environment, or, you know, more rural campus environments than you would find elsewhere. But, you know, like I said, an indicator for us that people are going to, or office is going to return, the first thing is density, because, you know, that is what drives the local economy in the, even those micro markets, like in downtown San Diego or Los Angeles. But then it's also about the industry itself. You know, in San Francisco, unfortunately, tech was becoming or had become the major player in that market. And so they have density, but now you have to look at, well, what are they serving? They were serving the tech world, and the tech world has, by and large, you know, outside of certain, you know, pockets, has gone remote. And it's going to be interesting to see how San Francisco responds. They once were a financial hub for the West Coast, and perhaps maybe that's where things tend to go back. Like we're seeing in New York, the financial services industry, banking, investment funds, hedge funds, those are all back to office, and there's a lot of traction there. So perhaps San Francisco gets back to that. Life sciences is another world that's really hard to do remote, whether that's in the lab side or just in the administrative support services. Those are all, you know, in-person markets. So, you know, there's a number of indicators that we're seeing, and I think it's a good sign for the office market across the country to see New York, which is certainly the office mecca, the mammoth, as you put it, is returning to office, and perhaps that'll inspire other markets to turn back on.
You know, in a sense, when you think about New York, and San Francisco's this way too, you walk out the door and there's your amenities. There's just, when you have, there's just so many businesses, there's the restaurants, there's places to exercise, there's parks and so on, urban parks anyway. And in a sense that the amenities are right there. So you don't even need to build them into the building, at least in some ways. So, you know, I found this interesting. I'm looking at some information that was sent to me by the company. And you guys have had flexibility, according to this, in addressing labor shortages and probably material shortages, because you are involved. You'll have to explain this to me. It sounds like you guys have your own capability. It says capability in trade, such as drywall, concrete, and doors, frames, hardware. And then you also have an affiliate company called Timber Lab, which is a holistic provider of mass timber. So do you guys have affiliated companies that produce this stuff so that when it came to a choke point, when the pandemic was happening, in particular, and in the aftermath of the pandemic, it was hard to get supplies, and it was hard to get supplies for a decent price. What advantages? Explain this to me. How does Swinnerton deal with this?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. But I'll start with the self-perform work operations, which I think is what you're referring to.
Yes. What does that mean, self-perform?
So, the over the course of the sort of the construction industry timeline, it went from what was called a master builder, where that company would have their own architects, designers, engineers, all of their project management and supervision, but then they would also have their own craft workforce. They would put the work in place with their own employees. Over time, that shifted to what's now become much more commonplace, which is the general contractor and the subcontractor relationship. So the actual tradesmen are employed by a subcontractor who's then contracted by the general contractor. We decided 10 or 12 years ago, we were going to bring back that master builder approach. And so over the course of, you know, the last 10 years, we have built our own workforce. And as it stands, we currently have about 2,400 tradespeople that support our projects across the organization in almost every one of our offices. So in terms of workforce planning, workforce development, and just having the folks to do the work that we're looking to do, we have taken that on. You know, personally, we have a hands-on approach, right? The second part of that is because we're now putting work in place with our own forces, we're actually purchasing direct from the manufacturers, whether that's drywall, metal studs, door frames and hardware, concrete materials, all of these materials that are typically through with us purchased through a subcontractor, which is usually done through a brokerage house. So there's a lot of, you know, touch points between the factory and the job site. And we have cut out a lot of those. We're now buying in bulk, and we're buying direct from the manufacturers so that we can control our own destiny in supply chain much more directly than our competitors, because we have the buying power, right? Last year, we did, I think, about $500 million worth of self-perform with our own forces. And so that gives us an edge in terms of being able to control all the different inputs that go into the supply chain and you know, the labor force.
Okay, interesting. Well, Andrew, thank you for taking the time. It's encouraging what you had to say about office. I'm one of those people who really like the office, but there's obviously a lot of people who say, you know, I'd rather work from home. But it's good to hear that office, especially on behalf of investors who are invested in the space and look forward to continuing to invest in the space, but only if it's going to perform. So obviously some encouraging words from you. Thank you for taking the time and coming on the program.
You got it. I appreciate you inviting us, and looking forward to continuing the conversation.